This is Theo Greminger from Player Profiler. Welcome to the Dynasty Hot Seat.
Yes, hello everybody and welcome back once again to the Dynasty Hot Seat, the only Dynasty show out there that is a certified inferno. And today we've got, hey Theo, this is your first time. We've chatted before on the Fantasy Wildcard podcast, but I've never had you on the Dynasty Hot Seat. Cannot wait to get chatting to you guys. If you don't know him, this guy, he's the OG of fantasy football, right? It's Theo G Fantasy. He is, of course, as he said at the top, he is the director of content at Player Profiler. And a whole lot of other stuff, Theo, that I'll let you get into because you might be the busiest man in the whole business right now.
Yeah, we just got back from Detroit. We did 3 days of draft coverage at Player Profiler. Yeah, really appreciate you having me on, Mags. We did the Fantasy Wild Card last time. That was really a lot of fun. And yeah, I really enjoy what you guys are putting out. But yeah, my seat is hot because I'm excited to be here in the Inferno, ready to do a mock draft with you. And you can find me at Player Profiler. Sonic Truth I do with Matt Kelly and Alan Soslowski. And then I also do Dynasty Life. That's sort of my solo Dynasty podcast. And then Press Coverage and First Class Fantasy. First Class Fantasy I do with Billy Muzio. Those should be kicking off pretty soon once we get sort of a little more redraft. And then Press Coverage, I have one actually coming out this week with Cody Carpentier. We kind of look at some sleeper rookies. So, you know, this time of year is the busy time. We got the best week of Dynasty football all year long, that little between NFL draft and like the start of your rookie drafts. It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So after Theo absolutely crushes this episode in Hot Seat, rewind back and listen to all that again and make sure you go and follow all that good stuff. And if you've not already, make sure you're here already, right? So why not hit that subscribe and that like button on the Dynasty Hot Seat as well? That's absolutely great stuff. And Theo, before we dive into this mock draft, let's have a quick chat. What do you notice about this 2024 class, like as a general, or is there anything from the draft that shocked you that you thought pre-draft?
So I think from an NFL perspective, I think it's there's no greater advantage for these NFL franchises than having a quarterback on a rookie contract. And there's no greater advantage than having a capable quarterback. And I think NFL teams are more willing than not to kind of push the chips in and, you know, use that draft capital on a player that maybe they're not convinced on, but with the hope for some sort of stability and some sort of production at the most important position, maybe in sports right now. So it's, you know, we anticipated four quarterbacks going. I think I had one mock draft I wrote where I had six quarterbacks going, but it was never like this. It was with somebody trading down, maybe Michael Penix end of the first round to like the Las Vegas Raiders, maybe Bo Nix, you know, a couple picks down, they trade down to like 20 and get Bo Nix. But the fact that everybody went inside of the top 15 is just incredibly telling. And the fact that the Atlanta Falcons are willing to do what they did, spend all that money on Kirk Cousins and say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and get Michael Penix as well. We kind of don't care about the public criticism. We're going to get the quarterback position right. Just tells you a lot. So I think a lot of, from our dynasty perspective, you're going to kind of hear all year long about how the 2025 quarterback class, upcoming class, is not as good. There's going to be less first round quarterbacks. But at the end of the day, NFL teams are going to push these guys up. It's just sort of the lay of the land. And also the wide receiver position. It's sort of like the 1B, where if you can have these wide receivers producing at an extremely high level on rookie contracts, that's a huge advantage because it's a position that's getting highly paid in the open market and teams are valuing wide receiver as highly as they ever have. So you've seen like the Puka Nacuas, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson give you like that top six production in fantasy. When those guys are on the field for an NFL team, it's one spot that they're not having to pay, you know, sort of that alpha wide receiver. So we love it for fantasy, but there's going to be more and more first round wide receivers and first round quarterbacks. And then from a dynasty perspective, this year is a wide receiver heavy rookie drafts. I'm in one now, a single QB league, and seven of the first nine spots are at the wide receiver spot. And I think it's just, you're going to continue seeing that through the second round. There's so many wide receivers that landed into interesting spots or have interesting profiles. The NFL showed it with the draft capital. And I think that's sort of the takeaway is this is the year where there's a lot of wide receivers available. So you have to kind of sift through and make sure you're picking the ones that you should be picking.
Yeah. And the interesting thing I was thinking from post draft is how much of your pre-draft notes do you have to just rip up and throw away, or do you try and keep it? You know what, actually, before the draft, I really like this guy. I'm going to stick to my guns. Or is sometimes you just can't ignore the draft capital with like a guy like Troy Franklin, for example, right?
Yeah, so I'll take the L on Braylon Allen. In the early process, that was a guy that I pushed up. We adjusted him at Player Profiler after the combine when he didn't test, but I still kept him in like around like RB6. Now, obviously, he has to come down into the double digits at the running back spot. You've got to be able to adjust. And I think it's really sort of it's not a lack of conviction on players. It's that we get this massive amount of information. The combine gives us a little bit of the answer. And then we get more of a complete answer after the NFL draft. We still want to stick to our guns when evaluating the talent profiles. But at the end of the day, the NFL is telling you sort of the opportunity that they have, the contract insulation that they're going to have, and sort of the internal pressure on the organization that these guys get an opportunity and produce. So, yeah, it absolutely means something for a guy like Troy Franklin, a guy like Braylon Allen. You've got to be able to adjust. Now, certainly Troy Franklin landed really well, but at the end of the day, a fourth round is the fourth round when it comes to wide receivers. So it's about hit rates. It's about, we have historical data here. We know that running backs drafted on day two are way more likely to produce than running backs drafted on day three. We know how first round quarterbacks are more likely to produce than any other round. I mean, it's almost a science at this point. Certainly there's outliers, and certainly it's like the life finds a way guys like, you know, Jalen Hurts and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Stephon Diggs that were sort of mispriced by the NFL and then just go grab it by the neck when they get into the league. But yeah, if you're one of these people that decides your rankings in like February and that's it, no matter what, the I know better than the NFL, I know better than these testing numbers, that's sort of the wrong way to play it. You have to take a little bit of everything, evaluation, then take the testing data, then take the draft capital, and have it all kind of make one clear picture for you to maximize your dynasty rosters.
Yeah, I could not have said that any better myself, man. I'm in full agreement with you there. So with that in mind and sort of a broad overview of the class, let's dive a little deeper into some specifics here, and we'll pull up our draft board here. Theo, you've done an incredible job. You've got every single pick. Well done. You gained all that value. Superb work, mate, I have to say.
That's how you tank. That's how you do a productive struggle. That's how you rebuild. Take notes, everybody. We're not going to tell you how I did it, but I acquired every single first rounder in this draft.
Yeah, exactly. He's traded up with himself, the whole lot. Like, it's absolutely genius. Like, things you never even thought of before. Brilliant. So we're in a super flex draft here, Theo. Non-tight end premium. Let's kick things off with the 1-1. What player are you going with and why?
Easily Caleb Williams. I think any sort of argument against Caleb Williams sort of went out the door when it became apparent that he was a Chicago Bear, and then they went out and got Keenan Allen. And to add icing on top of the cake, they go out and they draft Roma Dunze. They could have gone defense at 9 overall. They could have gone with an offensive lineman, which also wouldn't have been a bad outcome for Caleb Williams. But I think the Dunze selection shows that they're confident enough in their improving offensive line that already has youth, that it's going to take a step forward this year. And it's sort of just completely leaning into Caleb Williams. They end up taking another alpha-type wide receiver in a Dunze. They pair him with this incredible quarterback prospect. It's about as clear as it gets. There's really no argument for me to take anybody else besides Williams at the one.
Do you think, I was thinking about this over the weekend, last weekend, do you think Caleb Williams has the best landing spot for a quarterback going one overall ever?
Yes, I do. I said this in an article before the draft. You know, even like the DeAndre Swift edition. Plus, he's got, so DeAndre Swift, you know, this is a guy that's caught a ton of passes out of the backfield. You know, Roschon Johnson, his backup, is a capable pass catcher, capable pass blocker as well. Then you also get Cole Kmet, who was tight end 8 last year, who's completely being brushed aside like he's nothing. And certainly he took a hit in terms of his dynasty value with all these wide receivers there. But it's wide receiver 6 last year, wide receiver 8 last year in PPR, and then Roma Dunze, who would have been the wide receiver 1 last year and could quite possibly, in the evaluation process, could have been the wide receiver 1 in 2022 over Garrett Wilson and Drake London. That's how clean a prospect he was. So, yes, I do. And I also think, spoiler alert, we'll talk about him soon, J.J. McCarthy also lands in a one of the cleanest situations we've seen but certainly when you're looking at what we've certainly seen, like the quarterback 4 in a class land well, because it's usually a pretty good team that takes them. Mm-hmm. The quarterback 5, Atlanta got me Freudian slipping. Yeah. but Caleb Williams, the best situation we've seen for a 101 as long as I can remember.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody really that's had a better situation than Caleb. So yeah, I think you're right. He's locked in at my 1-1 as well. So this is kind of where the draft begins now. I feel like almost like 99% of people have Caleb at their 1. And I think the people that don't, when push comes to shove, they probably take him anyway. They just don't tell you online. So who have you got at your 2 then after Caleb Williams?
So I've seen a lot of people kind of switch this one, where it was maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. for them, and then they're going with Jaden Daniels. Certainly Jaden Daniels gets the 2 overall, which is really strong for him. Washington apparently wouldn't trade down either. They received some offers. But for me, it's still Marvin Harrison Jr. I think he's just, it's sort of like the Bijan Robinson factor, where I understand there's this super flex game theory people that are going to be highly critical of going anywhere other than quarterback here. But at the end of the day, I can flip Marvin Harrison Jr. for about 16 starting quarterbacks in Superflex tomorrow. So it's sort of like Bijan, where even if he's not, like, Bijan gives you top 10 running back finish, but I don't think people who drafted him would be like, that's exactly what I was expecting. It's sort of going to be like that with Marvin Harrison Jr. Even if he averages like 14 points per game, it's not like he's going to take a hit. He's so insulated. And I actually think that his landing spot's incredible. The last time we saw Kyler Murray get like an alpha wide receiver in his first year, it was DeAndre Hopkins in 2020, and Hopkins went nuts. He had like 160 targets, 115 receptions, just didn't score enough touchdowns to be wide receiver 1 overall. I think if you're coming up with a list of players that could be wide receiver 1 overall this year, Marvin Harrison Jr. has got to be like one of 10 names. Despite being a rookie, he's got wide receiver 1 overall upside. And he's a guy that a year from now, I wouldn't bet on it, but I think a year from now, he could move up to dynasty wide receiver 1 overall, ahead of Chase, ahead of Jefferson, ahead of Lamb. I mean, what's it going to take? If the guy has a wide receiver 5 finish and just looks incredible, based on the fact that he did it as a rookie, he might be more valuable than those guys, even if they finish, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, I think that really comes down to how, the two JJs link up over in Minnesota, right? If we see any kind of issue there, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. has a window to jump in and become that wide receiver 1 overall. So he's definitely got a shot. I think he's one of those guys that is, and I don't like putting the label on it, but for me, he's that generational talent, maybe more so than even like a Caleb Williams, who I don't think like quite gets there. But for Marvin Harrison Jr., for me, I think he's got that at the wide receiver position. Who's coming off the board right after him, though, Theo?
So it's you could go 2 ways here, but it's got to be Jaden Daniels, I think, because I love Malik Nabers. I think if Malik Nabers maybe landed with the Chargers instead of landing with the Giants, maybe you can make this argument that he's the same as Marvin Harrison Jr., which just bet on him. But you have to go Jaden Daniels, and I like Jaden Daniels a lot. I'm unwilling to push him up to the 102. I do think if you're quarterback needy, you can maybe make an argument for it, or at least try to trade down to the 103 if you think your league mate's targeting Marv. I think that's fine too. But Jaden Daniels gives us the immense rushing upside. He lands well. It's not like a sparkling landing spot, but we've seen Cliff Kingsbury produce with Kyler Murray. So we've already have like a sample size of a quarterback with rushing production with this offensive coordinator. and the weapons are fine. I mean, I think Terry McLaurin with Jahan Dotson maybe, and then we also get the two draft picks. I really like the Ben Sinnott pick, and I really like the Luke McCaffrey pick stylistically for what they want to do with Daniels. So Daniels is fine. He's the one to take here. I don't think it's a 100% bet like I do Marvin Harrison Jr. and Caleb Williams, but I think it's the appropriate play at the 103 and a guy that we should consider as like a top 15 quarterback in Dynasty.
He's a very different build, but I keep going back to, he just screams to me Anthony Richardson from last year, where you need to take that chance because the upside is so huge. You'll just be kicking yourself if he does end up, you know, producing what we think he can, right?
So the Commanders play at FedEx Field, which is like 45 minutes away from Baltimore. And they've been seeing Lamar Jackson, you know, for years, and how that fan base was sort of energized by Lamar, one of the highest selling jerseys in football, and that sort of dynamic scrambling ability translating to wins on an NFL field. And I think that that's what they're going for here. And you also have the first Heisman Trophy winner to play in Washington since RG3, who's also the number two overall pick and was also pretty awesome as a rookie, just happened to get hurt. But RG3 was extremely fantasy friendly for a short period of time. Let's hope it's a longer tenure, but I think Washington fans have been just dying to have that like face of the franchise guy. So Daniels, he's set up like for success. Let's just see it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a guy out of every prospect. He's the one I'm looking forward to seeing play the most. I can't wait. Like, he's just so intriguing. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how much rope they give him, what they'll let him do. Yeah, I can't, man. I'm just ready. I'm ready for some football already, Theo. I can't lie.
I'm ready
for it to get going. Yeah. Yeah. So we got Jaden Daniels in at three. Who's following him up at pick number four?
Neighbors. It's Malik Neighbors for me, ahead of other two quarterbacks. Neighbors is awesome. He's an awesome player. The situation, he could have gone higher in this draft, like we talked about. But again, like, I don't think this is that bad of a landing spot. I do have quarterback concerns, obviously, in New York. I think there'll be a tight leash for Daniel Jones. Drew Lock is a good enough backup that he's going to be annoying enough to Daniel Jones that if he comes out like 2-5 to start the year with the pressure on Brian Daboll to win this year, I wouldn't be surprised if they make a switch. I actually think the Giants will be a little bit better than people think. They've got some guys on the defensive side of the ball. They added a great deal of speed in this draft, whether it's Malik Neighbors, Theo Johnson, Tyrone Tracy. They got Brian Burns in the offseason on the defensive side of the ball. Yeah. So, like, I think the defense is going to step up. And I think that what Neighbors, the bowl argument for Neighbors this year in redraft, best ball, and certainly make an early dynasty impact is the last time we saw Brian Daboll go out and get an alpha, it was Stephon Diggs coming over to Buffalo. And that first year for Stephon Diggs, the entire offense was centered around him, much higher than fantasy people anticipated. He was like 160 target guy, finished as a top five wide receiver that year. I believe he might've been wide receiver two that year. I have to look at that, but he was way, way up there. And Neighbors is young, but Neighbors is awesome. And we've seen, like we talked about with Daniels, it's sort of a history repeating itself thing. The last time the Giants got an LSU wide receiver high in the first round, Odell Beckham, and he like broke fantasy, averaged like 24 points a game. So Malik Neighbors, I don't know if he's going to do that, but I think like I got an argument. We have a lot of very smart people at Player Profiler, like who crunch the numbers and have very good projections. And I always get in arguments with these people because I'm a lot more optimistic about the young players than certainly the computers are and the mathematician type guys. But like, I got in a big argument with these guys about where they're putting Malik Neighbors. Shout out to Dario Offstein and Bradley Stalder. These guys had them like somewhere between like wide receiver 29 and wide receiver like 35. I'm like, you guys are nuts. Malik Neighbors is going to be a wide receiver too this year. And Malik Neighbors is a good value right now on Underdog. Great value in Dynasty. Malik Neighbors is awesome. I think he's going to crush it this year.
Yeah, that seems too low, right? That's kind of where Jackson Smith and Jigba finished playing behind, you know, two other starters. Neighbors is the guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, these guys, they're in front of their calculators and computers, Mags. And we're out there in the streets doing drafts and actually out here competing. So you guys gotta go out there, touch some grass, get a little sun, and get into some drafts here, and not so much like just crunching numbers there. Yeah, there's bad things that could happen, but the fact is, a Wandale Robinson and a Jalin Hyatt are not going to hold back Malik Nabers in any way. Then you have the fact that Devin Singletary is the running back. Like, I am happy that I have a couple of Devin Singletary Terry shares this year. Like, that's a guy that was sort of left for dead last offseason. And now it's like sort of found money that you might get like running back 30 from him this year. But he's not a guy that's going to be preventing Malik Nabers from being the unquestioned focal point of the offense. Like, it's sort of like a bet on talent thing. And it's, is he situation like agnostic? I think he kind of is because he's so explosive. So it's all about the volume for him. There's certain spots he could have landed in where he was like 130 targets. Malik Nabers, I think he will out target Marvin Harrison Jr. this year.
I wouldn't be shocked by that at all. Yeah. I think he's like, he's by far and away that number one option there. So looking forward to seeing Nabers in New York for sure. So he's locked in at number four. Theo, this is kind of where I've noticed post-draft, the selections get a bit mixed up compared to where they were pre-draft. Does that happen to you at pick five as well, or are you sticking to where you were pre-draft?
I mean, pick five for me pre-draft was Brock Bowers, and it's still, you can make an argument for Brock Bowers here. I'm one of these people that's not as scared of the landing spot. I believe in the talent. You don't have a tight end premium, but I still think Brock Bowers is that incredibly clean prospect that could end up with multiple top five seasons at the tight end position, sort of like a wide receiver production at the tight end spot. But I think because of the landing spots where you get Drake May going as quarterback three and JJ McCarthy going to the absolute nuts landing spot, those two guys are absolutely in consideration here at 105. I think the argument for Roma Dunze goes down just a bit because you're going to have to wait on that sort of production this year. So I think right now this is more a team specific. And I think when you're in this 5-8 range, it's sort of like a mini tier with two exceptional skill position talents and then two quarterbacks that we're sort of betting on right now, but definitely have different type situations. I'll say for me, like, if I'm on the clock here, unless I'm in really good shape at the quarterback two spot, I might go Drake May. And I think I'm going to put Drake May in here as well. And this is sort of we don't love the weapons. We don't love the situation. Mm-hmm. But to take I think he has a much higher fantasy ceiling than a JJ McCarthy. I think this is for me, it's a ceiling versus a floor argument. If you want to go safe and you want to get a guy that is going to be locked in, potential to put up numbers like Kirk Cousins did, which is like quarterback 15, quarterback 12, you know, that's fine. And in Superflex, those guys help us a ton. But if you want to swing for the fences and go with a guy that has a high ceiling, I think it's Drake May. And I'll say this, the Patriots turned down 6th overall pick and next year's 2025 first from the Giants to hold on and select Drake May. Minnesota attempted to trade up as well. They stuck to their guns. They drafted Drake May. They have been completely haunted by Josh Allen in that division for years, and they have seen kind of how the other half lives. Now they have a guy who's kind of like Josh Allen light, and I think that the one benefit to going to a team with really not enough offensive identity is Drake May is going to be used a little bit more as a runner in New England than I think some anticipated. He can win at the line of scrimmage. He can score on – he could be the goal line runner around the goal line, like, you know, around the goal line and also short yardage. I think Drake May has high upside. I'm willing to take the chance here. I've seen some arguments to really push him down because of the bad situation. I'll take the counter argument. I think it's an opportunity. A year ago, Mags, we would have said he's the 102. It's not like an out of nowhere guy. So I'll go Drake May. And 7 of their 8 selections in this draft were on the offensive side of the ball. I think they're committed to this. They might screw up the picks, but they're going to attempt to bring in offensive guys for him.
Yeah, you're right. This time last year, he was easily up here. I mean, even I started doing these drafts in all the way back in October, Theo. We started doing mock drafts for this. Like, we had Jaden Daniels' name not even appear in the first two rounds. He wasn't even on people's radars. It was Caleb Williams, Drake May, Caleb Williams, Drake May. These were the two guys. So I think I've said this a couple of times in the show before. For me, I think Drake May is the biggest victim of prospect fatigue in the Dynasty community right now, because people are just kind of like, oh, Drake May, whatever. He's not new. He's not exciting. He's still damn good, though. So,
yeah,
I'm delighted with taking him at five. And even the next guy at six, you were talking about Drake May, JJ McCarthy. Is that where you're going with JJ right after, or is this where someone else slides in?
Begrudgingly, I go JJ McCarthy ahead of Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is like my guy. Yeah. And I want to push to get as much Brock Bowers as possible. I've sort of talked about him for weeks. But at the end of the day, it's super flex. There's a finite number of starters. And J.J. McCarthy landed so well that I think, like, you're never going to see him be, like, quarterback 32. This is always going to be a guy that even if he doesn't work out, the fact that there's Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, T.J. Hockenson, a very good offensive line, even if he's not good, he's, like, quarterback 20. So if he's good, which a lot of people think, then he's got a little bit higher upside than we saw from Cousins in this offense because he's got that dynamic running ability athletically. Now, whether he actually runs, that remains to be seen. It kind of takes two to tango where you need to have an offensive coordinator that actually designs some runs for you, which we've sort of seen with like Justin Herbert as a rookie had more rushing opportunities and more success than he's had like later in his career. Cause it's kind of like, why am I going to run Justin Herbert at all? Why would I even risk that? It's not like necessary. I'll just have him dump off to Austin Eckler. But if Minnesota decides to do that, I also think that we believe in the quality of the play callers in Minnesota. They continually seem to get a lot out of that offense. So unlike Drake May, JJ McCarthy's incredibly safe. I just think that I push May ahead of him because I will be a little bit of a gambler here, and I'll bet on the profile, and I think the ceiling. It's a ceiling versus floor, but I have a 106 in a big FFPC league, and I'll probably end up taking JJ McCarthy unless something weird happens. I wanted it to be Bowers, but at the end of the day, it's like, how can I pass up on this guy who could be a 10-year starter at quarterback with great weapons around him? Not just good weapons, like great weapons.
Yeah, and you're thinking, you got to think long-term as well here. You could get, if JJ McCarthy does pan out, or like you said, just plays well, flip it around next year if you're happy with a quarterback room, get Brock Bowers with a little plus on top, right? You can still make that happen. I think in drafts, sometimes you just have to take the most valuable player there. Even if it doesn't quite fit your team mold, hey, Dynasty's all about trading. So out and use that asset and get another one. You know, the one thing I'm really excited about JJ McCarthy, something that, you know, a couple of people did note on, the ball speed that he has, the zip that he has on the ball coming out of his hands, I think was fractionally below only Joe Milton at the combine. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to seeing actually whenever TJ Hockenson is fully fit and healthy, the link up that they're going to have, because I think that's a real sneaky one and people are sleeping on TJ Hockenson a little bit.
Hockenson's a great guy to go out. Not to get off subject here, I know you like to keep it tight in the inferno, but but TJ Hockenson's a great buy, especially if you're rebuilding. Because I got him at like tight end 8 in a dynasty startup recently. Wow. And people are pushing guys like Kyle Pitts goes ahead of him now. Certainly Brock Bowers goes ahead of him. I would still take Bowers ahead of him. But it's like the Hockenson discount is simply because there was the quarterback uncertainty, which we now know that he's attached to JJ McCarthy. And then the injury discount. But the contract is so insulated. Hockenson, go get yourself some Hockenson.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you, Theo. So we got JJ locked in at 6. Who's following him at 107 for you, Theo?
Brock Bowers. I think Brock Bowers is awesome. And, you know, again, I would consider him a little bit higher. If I was dead set at quarterback and I was willing to, like, pass up on those guys, I don't think it's egregious to take Brock Bowers ahead of him. I just think he's such a good prospect, such a good player. And I think the landing spot is kind of like twisting people up here. So he's got the landing spot going against him, which I think a year from now, that's going to free up, because I think Davante Adams, maybe it's his last year in Vegas. A year from now, Brock Bowers slides into being the focal point of the passing game, the focal point of the offense. When we look at the tight ends who kind of break fantasy, the tight end 1 overall types, it's players that are the leading target on their team. Talk about like the Mark Andrews's, the Travis Kelce's, Gronkowski at certain times in his career, where they're the clear focal point. I think Bowers has that. Like, Jacoby Myers is not going to hold that back. Michael Mayer certainly is not going to hold that back. He's a great player. They took him 13 overall. I think he's a fantastic player in a better spot than some people are alluding to. You also, dynasty wise, get a discount because people are scared of what happened with Kyle Pitts. And they're just scared that it's going to happen again with this high profile tight end. Just because, if anything, it's like a fallacy to try to think that those two things are going to happen two times in a row. Just because Kyle Pitts was this great, great prospect, and I think he still is, and has struggled, doesn't mean it's going to happen to Bowers. It's not like a you know, there's not some rule saying it's got to happen again, guys.
Yeah, this is not at all. And I think as well, the people worried about Michael Mayer, if you sort of were listening to any pre-draft content this time last year, people who weren't fully on a Michael Mayer, the reason was is because he's such a good blocker that that's probably where he's going to be used. He's not really this like Swiss Army knife of a tight end. He is more of this like efficient, really good blocker, goes in, does his job. He's not really going to be out there catching too many passes, which is what we've seen. So, I mean, Theo, are you worried about Michael Mayer at all taking over? Because I'm really not.
No, not at all. I think you nailed it. I think if anything, if you're in a deep dynasty format, you could go buy some Michael Mayer, because I don't think he's going to disappear, but I think they're quite different. I think Brock Bowers is sort of like an overgrown wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Bowers can block a little bit. Like, he's 240, but he's very strong and very athletic. But Georgia played in a lot of two tight end sets. If you recall, Darnell Washington was selected on day two last year by Pittsburgh. And that was the Todd Monken offense, where he did a lot of two tight end sets at Georgia. So I think Bowers is used to playing with another tight end that's a little more in line. Bowers is sort of like a big Jordy Nelson, where you can move him on the outside. Like, he's going to get moved around. The guy's awesome. He's just awesome. Don't overthink this one. It's sort of like he fits in any sort of dynasty build. And I will say, our like numbers crunchers at Player Profiler, they have him as tight end 8 this year in terms of like PPR scoring at the tight end position. So like, Brock Bowers, they're bullish on, being very impactful in terms of his performance this year, not like a long-term play. So I'm all about Bowers.
Love that. Absolutely love it. So Bowers is locked in at lucky number 7. So who's up at pick number 8 then for you?
Roma Dunze. And it's kind of, this one I could look very stupid in a couple of years for putting him only at the 108. Like, we know a quarterback's going to bust. Roma Dunze is not going to bust. And at the end of the day, I'm punishing him for year one production. It's probably the incorrect to push him down to 8. I think, again, you can make an argument to take him as high as 5. You have a player that's this good that goes inside of the top 10 and then gets attached to a quarterback that's one of the better prospects that we've seen. So you're basically giving Roma Dunze the absolute best non-Kyler Murray, Justin Herbert landing spot in terms of a quarterback play.
Yeah.
And we've seen it. This sort of reminds me of the CeeDee Lamb situation in 2020, where Lamb goes to Dallas in the first round. Now, he's a much later pick than Roma Dunze. Like, he was CeeDee Lamb, call him, I don't remember exactly, call it pick 20. And then you get the argument that Amari Cooper is so locked into the wide receiver 1 spot in Dallas, and Michael Gallup's a strong wide receiver 2. The path is blocked for him in year 1. CeeDee Lamb ends up outproducing both those guys from like midseason on. It only takes him a few months to kind of annihilate Amari Cooper in terms of like the pecking order. Then the next year takes a step forward, and then now we see CeeDee Lamb how he's playing. So end of the day, Roma Dunze actually becomes a huge value at this point in the draft. If you had 108s and you didn't need a quarterback, you're feeling fantastic that you might potentially be getting Roma Dunze here.
You know, I think people are forgetting, this time last year, nobody wanted anything to do with Keenan Allen. Can you remember that?
Right. Yeah.
And now, all of a sudden, Keenan Allen is going to be the death, like the death of Roma. Roma Dunze is he's so similar to Keenan Allen in a lot of ways that it just seems to me like this is just a natural progression. It's going to come in. We're going to see Keenan. Roma Dunze, hey, Roma Dunze gets to go and learn from Keenan Allen. How cool is that for him? Like, I think this is a great landing spot.
I love Allen, but you know, Allen's 32. So it's like this is not some long-term impediment. I think that the real question is, how long does it take him to sort of overcome DJ Moore? Because we saw DJ Moore take a big step forward, wide receiver 6 last year. in PPR scoring, Allen was 8. And now you get Adunze, who I think a year from now, it's sort of like, is he going to be drafted? Who's going to be drafted more highly heading into 2025 redraft? Can Adunze overtake DJ Moore? I think he absolutely can.
Yeah.
I wouldn't bet on it, but he absolutely has that pathway.
I love what the Bears are doing. There's probably only one guy not loving what the Bears are doing, and that's Justin Fields, but we'll move on from Rome Odunze. On to pick number 9, Theo. Who are you taking here after Rome?
I mean, I think that for me, this one's pretty easy. It's Xavier Worthy. And Xavier Worthy lands, it's like the absolute best landing spot, arguably, in the entire draft for fantasy. Is Xavier Worthy being attached to Patrick Mahomes? If you had to pick a landing spot for him, you know, a couple days before the draft, like what's the maximum, the maximum production landing spot? It's Kansas City, and that's where he lands. So you get the fastest player ever at the wide receiver position attached to maybe the greatest quarterback ever. It's the first time that Kansas City selected a quarterback in the first round since 2011. And they go ahead and do it with Troy Franklin, excuse me, with Xavier Worthy. And Xavier Worthy also sort of had somewhat conflicting skill sets in certain ways with Hollywood Brown. But I think they're leaning into adding that sort of team speed. Xavier Worthy was an early breakout of Texas. This is a player that played with multiple NFL players, not only Adonai Mitchell, but also Jatavion Sanders and Jordan Whittington. And Jonathan Brooks. So Xavier Worthy is producing around NFL players. This is a guy that broke out early. This is a guy that probably would have been a first-round pick for us doing this before. Now it's like, can I consider pushing Xavier Worthy into the elite top 8? I can't do that, but for me, he's a clear 9.
Do you think the guy at the Bills that let the Chiefs trade up to take him is the same guy that let them trade up to take Patrick Mahomes all those years ago as well? Like, what are they doing?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's crazy. It's really crazy. I mean, it's sort of like you could just see Xavier Worthy being a nightmare in the playoffs for several of these teams that passed him up. Like, I think Cincinnati, end of the day, they do the practical thing and they draft, Mims, on the offensive line. But instead they could have taken Xavier Worthy as the T. Higgins replacement a year from now. So it's like all these, it's just funny. It's just funny to me. Xavier Worthy's so good in this situation. It's like, this is what we talk about with like landing spots. Like Xavier Worthy would have been an effective player in several landing spots, but this particular landing spot, like for me, it's, you have this cluster of wide receivers from like 9 through 14, where we could kind of like make an argument for them, but the landing spot really pushes Worthy ahead of those guys. It actually probably is Worthy closer to Adunze for me than he is whoever the next wide receiver would be.
I'm fully agreed with you. I think that's the perfect landing spot. And I'm also a Kansas City Chiefs fan, Theo. So, I'm not going to say anything else about the landing spot other than it's just absolutely perfect. So you mentioned he is the bit of a tier gap between Worthy and the next wide receiver. Are you going wide receiver next at 10 or are you going with another position?
This one I keep struggling with. And I think you could make an argument for a quarterback. You can make an argument for a running back. But I think I am going to go back to the wide receiver well and just take Brian Thomas Jr. Because I think Brian Thomas Jr., he landed in the spot we sort of wanted him to land in. In the pre-draft process, it seemed like it was going to be Jacksonville. Now Jacksonville taking him at 17 would have made sense. They actually trade down and still get their guy. But it's sort of like we see the Christian Kirk as the wide receiver one there has never really been targeted more than like 130 times. Gabe Davis, we sort of know what he is. He's a big play guy, scores a lot of touchdowns. And I think he steps right into the Zay Jones role. Zay Jones is gone. Calvin Ridley's now in Tennessee. But Thomas Jr. stepping into sort of the Ridley role is super interesting because Ridley was targeted 25 times in the red zone last year. One of the leaders in the NFL. He had 130 plus targets himself. So I think Brian Thomas is not a complete skill set type wide receiver. And I think there's some people that would have said, Theo, put Ladd McConkey here, put Keon Coleman here, put Jonathan Brooks here, put one of the quarterbacks. But at the end of the day, it's sort of like the Xavier Worthy argument where I get a guy who had 17 touchdown catches at LSU last year in the SEC. had an incredible combine performance. He's a low 4.3s guy. There's some similarities to DK Metcalf as a rookie, where he just becomes this physical specimen, outside alpha, doesn't have to have this diverse skill set, but can do certain things. And I think Brian Thomas is actually better with the ball in his hands than some people think. I think he can excel on yak. He certainly can be a guy that can win deep, and he's a guy that can win in the red zone. And he lands on a team with a quarterback that's locked in with an opportunity to be the number one target sooner than later. I'm going to lean into it. He's a cleaner prospect than those two guys that went in the second round.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the sort of vacated red zone targets there. Brian Thomas, obviously leading all college football in touchdown catches as well last year. So I think that's going to be really good for him. And Theo, I'm really excited to see, this is going to be the first time we're going to see Trevor Lawrence with a proper, like, real blue chip prospect without any kind of controversy hanging over the head or whatever. This is Trevor Lawrence, who was meant to be that generational guy. I know we mentioned it with Kayla, but Trevor Lawrence, that was the guy we're finally going to see this year. Is he for real? And Brian Thomas is going to be a big reason to saying, is he or is he not? So I'm looking forward to seeing Trevor Lawrence play. What about you?
Yeah, and I think you kind of nailed it. And they got bigger, more athletic, and faster and younger at the wide receiver spots. I actually think Gabe Davis, stylistically, you saw the sort of spike week performances he was able to provide to Josh Allen. That's going to help Trevor Lawrence. Also, Gabe Davis, a Florida guy. He went to Central Florida, which is not too far from Jacksonville, Orlando, and Jacksonville, not too far. So it's sort of like am I allowed to get a little excited about Gabe Davis, and at least in best ball? I think I'm okay. I'm allowed to these days. The price is adjusted. He gets Brian Thomas on the outside. So they have these two big bodied outside wide receivers. He'll have a healthy Christian Kirk this year, who will naturally just kick into the slot. And then Evan Engram, who's one of the better, winners at the tight end position in terms of just route running, in terms of being able to win near the line of scrimmage, and just a safety blanket type weapon. And Travis Etienne took a step forward last year as a receiver in his de facto year two. So this is a good year for Trevor Lawrence. Now, if he doesn't take a step forward, this is a tough one, because we talked about four quarterbacks. Caleb's already ahead of him in Dynasty, and those other three guys could leapfrog him. If we see him perform like he did in 2022, he's back on Broadway. What's the England equivalent of the main street in London? I could say back on.
Broadway's like the theater as well, right? The West End.
It's like back on Broadway. Yeah, back on Broadway is sort of a theater. Yes, I could say back on the West End. Doesn't sound as good. Broadway, we'll stick with it. Back on the West End. So I think Trevor Lawrence will go from, if he's another like quarterback 15, whatever, then, some of these guys could just pass him by. So it's a big tilting year for him specifically, but they certainly have done a lot for him. Still some offensive line concerns there, but not really at the wide receiver spot. I think it's an offensive win for the Jacksonville offense.
Yeah, I'm completely agreeing. I'm really looking forward to seeing if he can finally live up to that massive hype that was behind him. And Brian Thomas, hopefully, he can help do that. So we got two picks left in round number one. Theo, who's going at 111?
I'm going to take Bo Nix, and I think Bo Nix is sort of like he's a top 15 pick. I probably, game theory wise, should have pushed him ahead of Worthy and Thomas, simply because he's going to be a starting quarterback this year, which makes his trade equity go up immediately, because there's only just so many of them. And I also think he's sort of tethered now to he's tethered to Sean Payton. Sean Payton's career in Denver is going to be based on the success of Nix. He took Nix here in the first round. He's getting a lot of flack for it. I think it was Todd McShay that came out and said that a lot of people had him graded as a backup quarterback, didn't have him graded as a first-round quarterback. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because this is a good fit. We saw kind of what, and this is certainly, he's certainly not Drew Brees, but the offense they ran with Drew Brees in New Orleans, with a lot of quick hitters, a lot of easy, high accuracy, low ADOT looks. Bo Nix did that at Oregon, and he's got a little bit of scrambling ability. He's an accurate passer. And I know that sort of the thing this week is, we can't look at the accuracy numbers from Oregon because they ran this sort of manufactured offense with a lot of screens, a lot of very quick, like, run after the catch opportunities for his talented offense with the guys like Bucky Irving and Troy Franklin. But I don't care. Bo Nix was really, really good in that. He was incredibly productive. And also, he can run a little bit. Bo Nix had a 14-touchdown season at Oregon the year before. And I think that that's going to help him out a little bit. I think he'll have a little bit higher fantasy floor because he will get some rushing opportunities. I think Bo Nix is fine here. It's sort of it's not really a begrudgingly, I'm going to take him here type pick. Now, I would take Michael Penix higher than these guys if there was no Kirk Cousins. So Penix sort of becomes a interesting one here at the back end of the first round, or if you're like in a rebuild mode and you want to try to trade up for this pick, because I think Penix is a better prospect than Nix. But like we talked about, landing spots and situations matter. Bo Nix has the starting spot. He'll be there game one, and let's see how he does this year. But at 111, got to take the shot on the number 12 overall pick.
Starting quarterback, right? Super flex. Yeah. It's just, you just don't overthink it too much. Just take the guy there at 111. I'm excited to see what happens with him. Bo Nix was someone. My main take on Bo Nix was I wasn't sure if he was the guy, if he was like cerebral and really clever, or was it the scheme he was running that was cerebral and really clever? But I think in Sean Payton's system, that's really, you're right, it's tailor-made for him. And then, of course, you're thinking, well, who's going to stretch the field? Hey, let's just get the exact same guy. Let's just do that. And then that's going to be perfect for him. So you got one more pick in the first round, Theo. Who are you going with?
So this one's sort of like, I could go with one of five guys here. I could certainly go with, I think it's, you know, we'll talk about these guys in a minute, but it's Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, Brooks Benson, and Michael Penix for me. And you could sort of go team context here, but I think that the appropriate selection is probably Ladd McConkey, because he falls into a spot that he will be the most targeted wide receiver there. I'm fairly certain in that. I don't see Josh Palmer holding him back. Tyler Boyd's coming in the building. I mean, that'll be another, you know, sort of bullet dodged. Maybe they add somebody like a Zay Jones because they are devoid of pass catching weapons. There's going to be no pressure on Harbaugh to get anything out of Quentin Johnson. If he's not good, he's not going to be on the field because, you know, the whole narrative that Quentin Johnson tore up Harbaugh in the bowl game for TCU a few years ago. Like, I think that's a cool argument, and he certainly knows who the guy is. But, you know, Quentin Johnson struggled as a rookie. You can't always bet on those guys taking a step forward in year two. Ladd McConkey is an elite separator, a really, really good athlete, and now lands in an offense devoid of pass-catching weapons and attached to one of the better quarterbacks in Dynasty in Justin Herbert. So I think you go Ladd McConkey. I think he's going to produce for you immediately. I know some people are knocking him for being a little bit older than you'd like to see here and a little bit more slight. But at the end of the day, it doesn't get a better path. I'll say that the bear argument for him is, could he be a wide receiver one in the sense of like a Christian Kirk, where Christian Kirk had that wide receiver 18 year a few years back and then sort of topped out? I think there's a chance that Ladd McConkey has to deal with a more alpha-like profile in year two. The fact that LA went and got Joe Alt, they're going to feel less pressure to get a lineman. Maybe they go with a wide receiver in next year's draft, which there certainly will be some of them. But these are all just like galaxy braining reasons to not take a guy. I think it's clear, wide receiver one, good quarterback, and a profile that we liked a lot in this whole process. Just take Ladd McConkey.
Yeah, you're reading my mind a bit here, Theo, actually, because I was saying he'll definitely be that number one target guy this year. That might change next year, but just you still got to play football this year, guys. You still got to get points this year as well. So let's take Ladd McConkey here and get some guaranteed points on the board at 112, which is never a certainty. So it just shows you the strength of this amazing class. And Theo, into round two, we're going to mix it up a little bit. If I could get you to give me your 2-1, 2-2, and 2-3, and then we'll sort of focus in on just one of them to chat about.
I can give you, I'll give you my next few, because I think it's sort of a tier. It's like sort of a cleanup tier.
Sounds good.
So I'll go Michael Penix here. at the 201. Then I'll go Trey Benson and Jonathan Brooks back-to-back, however you want to pick them. I personally like Benson a little bit more because I think he's going to outscore him in year one. They're both fine. And then I'll go Keon Coleman, making sure I'm not forgetting anybody. Yeah, so I guess it's the 204, actually, that kind of takes me through. I think after this, it's a little bit more of a decision to make after these four guys. But I think this is like your four, and then it's sort of like a little bit of a pick-your-poison situation. But for these guys, they're all sort of locked in here. You could have taken any of these guys at sort of 12. They're all sort of a flat tier, but flat in a good way, because I think all five of these guys, including Ladd, have a real path to helping you short-term and big-time long-term production as well.
Yeah, I think these are the right names coming off the board here. And we can't not talk about Michael Penix, right? This is the guy on everybody's lips. Theo, do you think Michael Penix might be the only case in NFL history where a guy has got surprising top 10 draft capital and actually his stock has gone down?
It's weird. It's really, really weird. I think that there is, like, it's an odd situation. It's sort of like the Russell Wilson, Matt Flynn situation on steroids, because Flynn was the sort of a hot free agent signing. He was, you know, for everybody there that's not as old as I am, like, Flynn was the backup to Aaron Rodgers. He had an opportunity, played well, won some games. Seattle gives him a huge amount of money. Then Pete Carroll drafts Russell Wilson in round three. Russell Wilson just takes his job. It's sort of the wasted free agent contract has happened before. Now, $180 million or whatever they gave Kirk Cousins over 4 years, that's crazy. But it's sort of Atlanta is unwilling to be bad at quarterback again. They sunk the money into Kirk Cousins, and I think that was their plan, was to just stop, and that's their quarterback. But throughout their evaluation process, for better or for worse, they loved Michael Penix. Atlanta had Penix as the QB2 in this class, ahead of Daniels, ahead of May, and they showed you they took him ahead of McCarthy. So I don't know. I think this is the argument that you're not going to see Michael Penix until 2025 or 2026. There's no sample size for that. Like, all of these guys that have been, let's draft him and then wait on it, have not been drafted inside of the top 10. Talk about Jordan Love, where he was selected. It was in the first round, but later in the first round. You talk about Lamar Jackson, very end of the first round. You talk about Jalen Hurts, second rounder. So these like, you know, like quarterback in waiting picks, we've never seen one selected 8 overall. So they can say whatever they want. And certainly there's the scenario is Kirk Cousins could come in there, and if he plays well and Atlanta's competing for the division and Cousins sort of plays like Minnesota Cousins and they're winning games, then I do think he can keep Penix off the field the entire year. But all it has to do is slip up a little bit, and you're going to have this sort of situation where Penix could take this job. So it's a really, really weird spot. Like, Penix could look like an absolute steal in some of these drafts a year from now. Maybe he should have gotten in the top 8, could be the argument, a year from now. Because I do think we love the landing spot. If there was no Kirk Cousins, we'd say, wow, he's got Drake London and Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson, and he plays indoors. So I don't know. It's definitely like mental gymnastics on this one for sure. But you can't really let him go lower than this. It is super flex. He did get top 10 draft capital. You don't know more than the NFL does, even if we think they're making goofball decisions.
Yeah, exactly. Which they do quite often, but quite often sometimes they turn around and actually turns out that wasn't a bad decision after all.
Oh, yeah.
Look at Jordan Love, for example, right? And Penix, I think Michael Penix for me is a 2-1 likelihood, unless you traded for it. You're probably a rebuilding team. What a perfect player for a rebuilding team. Someone you can continue to rebuild. You can put Michael Penix on your taxi squad. You don't need to worry about him. And then when your time comes to compete, you should hopefully have Michael Penix starting in your team. So yeah, don't let him slip anywhere past this. I'm right with you there, Theo. So let's go. What do we got? We got 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's get the next tier of players. Since you got these guys in tiers, do you? Or do you want to just rattle off three more? I'll let you choose, Theo. It's
up to you. I'll rattle off three. Benson and Brooks both landed incredibly well. We had Benson as our RB1, among this class heading into the draft. We'll keep him at RB1. I know a lot of sites have moved Brooks up, but Benson's a next level athlete. You know, you're talking about 215 pounds, 4.39 40, and lands in a wonderful situation where James Conner is going to be 29. Conner played well last year, but Conner's missed time in every single season of his NFL career, and he's never really had to deal with a Benson behind him. And even if you want to take this as a handcuff plus for the year, a guy that you're going to use when Conner misses time, or maybe if you're in a jam and you know, handcuff plus, let's see what Benson can do with some explosive plays, that's fine. But I think really the argument for 2025 is, I think Trey Benson could be a second rounder in redraft and best ball in 2025 based on the quality of the offense, based on his skill set. I think that this is a slam dunk landing spot. It's an easy one. Jonathan Brooks, same thing. We would have loved to have seen Dallas draft him, but we saw what Dave Canales was able to do with Rashad White volume-wise. Now he gets Jonathan Brooks. And Carolina sort of, I think that we talked about it in a couple of our pods on Player Profilers. I said I thought Carolina might take a running back at 39. They end up trading down, getting Brooks at like 47. So pretty good call. But the whole idea being, what better way to protect a quarterback that struggled than with a talented running back, where it takes a lot of the heat off of Bryce Young to sort of be the focal point of the offense? You get a multi-talented running back who can do it all, projects for a three-down skill set. The difference for me is I think Benson outscores him as a rookie, and I think Benson is going to be in a higher quality offense. That's sort of the tiebreaker. But if you want to go Brooks ahead of Benson, that's fine. I think they're right there next to one another. Personal preference. They're both should be considered to be top 20 running backs in Dynasty right now. And then Keon Coleman, same as Ladd McConkey. Keon Coleman, this one, again, is a ranking that could get me in trouble, because if it works out for Keon Coleman, Keon Coleman's going to be really, really good. And Keon Coleman's already sort of a guy that Buffalo fans really seem to love already. He's great been kid. Very, very funny and very personable at these, like the interviews with the media. It's a guy we're all sort of rooting for. And he just landed next to Josh Allen as a potential wide receiver one. And he's going to be on the field. There's no threat to him when it comes to like Shakir or Samuel. Their skill sets don't overlap with him. So at the very least, he's not Stephon Diggs, but I think he's going to be way more heavily used than like Gabe Davis and less used than Stephon Diggs. If we could kind of hit like right in the middle of those two guys, maybe a little bit higher, I think Keon Coleman has potential to be 130 target guy for attached to Josh Allen, which I think is awesome. And so Keon Coleman, great pick. Now, if you're looking to get into tiers for this, for your rookie drafts this weekend, the top three or the top four is a tier. Then the top eight is sort of a tier, like the next little group. And then I think when you go nine through like 16 is also sort of a wide tier. And you can kind of pick your main guy at nine, Xavier Worthy for me, but you can make an argument. It's like, it's really, really strong up to here. And then after we get through here, it takes a little bit more of conviction. It gets a little more flat. So I kind of love pushing the chips in, trying to get into this top 16.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I'm right there with you. If I can push into one of those tiers, like you said, those top guys are like get into that next tier. And this is where there's so much value slinking around in the second round, even being able to trade back a couple of picks and still get a guy you're really, really happy with. There's still loads of talent here, and we're rolling into pick 2-5. Theo, I think you said you're going to give us the next 3, 5, 6, and 7.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Let me pull what I have. So I think if you're so not tight end premium, so we'll go with Ricky Pearsall. I think Pearsall is interesting here. You know, it's sort of a bet on talent. Again, it could be more of a 2025 bet, but if Deebo Samuel gets moved this summer, Pearsall is going to explode in terms of where he's going to go in redraft. Big-time athlete, and I think that the success of Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk should make you feel pretty good about how this organization evaluates talent at the wide receiver position in this range of the draft. They've gone 2 for 2. They can make it 3 for 3. I will say that Blake Corum would probably be next. Corum, again, he's kind of a little bit boxed out with Kyren Williams, but Kyren Williams is 190 pounds, and I think that Blake Corum, if he gets his foot in the door, it's Sean McVay, he's going to get production out of him. Now, you could sort of go in a number of directions here with your next player. So I'll just go with a guy that I'm really into. I'll go Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lloyd, again, it's a kind of a run on running backs here where Marshawn Lloyd, it's sort of the it's a arbitrage Trey Benson, where a year from now, I think Josh Jacobs could move on. Marshawn Lloyd is going to be a handcuff plus this year in a very good offense, can do a lot of the Aaron Jones things this year. And then next year would be the year he kind of takes off. Again, I it's my preference with these running backs. There's some cleaner wide receiver values, but that's sort of where I am at on that. And I will say I like, gosh, I keep wanting to change these things around, but I'll say I love Ben Sinnott. And I'm comfortable taking him in the second round of non-tight end premium because I think he's a set it and forget it, like top 15 type dynasty tight end right now. And I think that just to game theory it, if I didn't have any third round picks, maybe I would be a little less hesitant to lock in Sinnott. But if I had my normal picks and I didn't trade them away, I know I'm going to get access to some running backs and wide receivers that I like in round three. But tight end, it's sort of a big difference for me. It's sort of Brock Bowers, huge teardrop, Ben Sinnott, big teardrop down to the next tight end. So I think Sinnott is really, really interesting there. And I really love Roman Wilson. I'll push Roman Wilson up here. I think he's going to be a very solid player, lands with an organization that knows how to use wide receivers. They have an outstanding hit rate when it comes to evaluating, pretty much offensive talent in general. And especially when they do it in like round two, round three. So Roman Wilson also steps right into a Deontay Johnson role. We saw what Tank Dell was able to do last year after a really strong Senior Bowl, drafted in round three into a situation he could be on the field the whole time. That's sort of Roman Wilson right there. And then if I'm going to keep this going, I guess it's Jalen Polk for me. I think Polk is, this is, again, lands into a situation where he's got a clear path. Then I'll go Jalen Wright at the 211, another contingent upside type play. And then I'll take Xavier Leggett because Xavier Leggett's a first round pick. I don't think he's going to do well, but I probably should have pushed Xavier Leggett a few picks earlier. Just based on the fact the profile, if he hits, he'll make me look very foolish here, but I don't have a lot of faith in the organization that also drafted Terrace Marshall, also drafted Jonathan Mingo, now gets Xavier Leggett. It's just weird to me. And Carolina, they could have drafted Ladd McConkey. Everybody would be like, okay, Carolina could have drafted Keon Coleman, but then said they go kind of Xavier Leggett. And apparently New England tried to trade up to him, get him at 32 as well. So at the end of the day, like these NFL teams liked him, but it's hard for us in Dynasty. He's a true outlier in terms of the late career production. And I realize that was a quarterback and all that kind of stuff, but it's hard betting on these guys with only 1 year of college production. The NFL certainly bet on him. So maybe I should have been a little bit more aggressive with Leggett. But, there's like five more guys you could kind of consider. So I think once you get into the back half of the second, it's such a flat tier that I think actually probably those top six picks in the third are actually really valuable right now.
Yeah, the fact that you're saying that it's the Panthers who took Leggett and the other team interested was New England, two teams I'm not really putting my chips in and knowing their wide receivers the last couple of years. So that doesn't fill me with too much confidence. But do you know what I want to talk about here a little bit? Theo, Jalen Wright breaks my heart a little bit. I thought he was absolutely great prospect. And at best here, he's going to be 50-50 in a year's time. That is like best case scenario for him, which isn't great for his value.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys in the second round, when you get past the Brooks Benson tier, are contingent plays. But I'll say Wright has two outs because you have Mostert. If he goes down, Jalen Wright steps into that role and looks good. It would kill me if anything happened to my guy Devon Achane. But if Achane went down, Jalen Wright steps in, he's rolling. And at the end of the day, it's a little bit like the Xavier Worthy selection where you have to bet on guys in certain situations, in certain offenses. You don't want to have no Jalen Wright on your dynasty rosters. And also a year from now, there's a scenario where Achane and Wright are both top 24 running backs in dynasty, like Wright does enough this year, and then you know, Mostert moves on, and we're like, okay, Jalen Wright's like running back 21 and Devon Achane's running back 7. I think that could happen too. So yeah, it stinks. Jalen Wright was a guy that I would have hoped that we would have been taking at like the 1-2 turn here. Instead, we take him towards the back end of the second round. But I think the fact that he goes on day 3, lands in this spot, and we're still pushing him into the end of the second, it sort of like speaks highly to his quality profile in terms of fantasy football. Like, this is a guy that can do a lot with not too many touches, incredibly explosive. We saw Devon Achane last year. We saw what Mike McDaniel was able to do with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Certain coaches get the most out of their skill position players in terms of speed. At least we know Jalen Wright landed well stylistically. Hey, Pittsburgh was a team that had him in for a visit as well, I believe. It could have been a real nightmare situation when you start talking about these guys falling day 4. Philadelphia could have taken him, and he would have been behind Saquon, which would have been less of a appealing situation, in my opinion, as well. So Jalen Wright in that offense, the way they use 2 running backs every week, he's got some viability.
Yeah, you're making me feel better about him already, Theo. Thank you very much. Well, that's boosted my spirits.
I mean, it all stinks. For Marshawn Lloyd, the landing spot stinks. I mean, if Marshawn Lloyd is a Dallas Cowboy, we're taking him like 10 overall in this draft. So Dallas really let us down in fantasy by devaluing the running back position. They are like the analytical organization now, which all that means is we're going to get 220 targets for CeeDee Lamb this year, I hope.
Yeah, CD's gonna explode. Who's their is Zeke really their RB? Is that really happening, Theo? Is Zeke really the guy?
I could see them signing some sort of a cut candidate, Rico Dowdle, Zeke. I think Deuce Vaughn might catch 35 balls this year. Like, I think it's going to be a committee, with a lot more pass volume. The thing is, they had to address offensive line in this draft because they lost so many guys. So I don't know. The offense is going to be very, very much funneled through Lamb. I think Ferguson is still kind of what he is. And then, you know, Brandon Cooks, Flournoy, guys like that. I mean, they're not exactly making you feel too optimistic, whereas Philadelphia had like this incredible offseason. I think Philadelphia kind of overtakes them again in the NFC East.
Yeah, I think so as well. So, Theo, before I let you go, everyone's favorite topic. What's a sleeper player who, even after the draft, you're still like, damn it, no one's talking about this guy. Who's your guy? You're like, no one's talking about him enough.
The problem is everybody talks about these guys. You know, this is like, there's no more discount. So the problem with some of these sleeper picks is, like, Kamani Vidal is everybody's favorite sleeper now, but he's going to go at like the 209 in some of these leagues. Like, there's going to be multiple leagues where a 6th round running back out of Troy goes in the 2nd round. So I'll say, for me, I like Tyrone Tracy as a player that I'm going to bet on. I think Tyrone Tracy is super interesting. This is a guy that, you know, has all of the athletic measurables that you'd ever want. Not a huge sample size at running back, but he did perform well for a year at Purdue, was a wide receiver at Iowa, next level athlete at running back. Like, athletically, you're talking about a guy who's similar to like a Marshawn Lloyd, in terms of like speed score and all that. And we talk about being elevated by landing spots. I think the community is very quick to point at Vidal as a guy who landed well, but not Tracy, because Tracy, the quality of the offense is sort of like, whatever, it's the Giants. But Devin Singletary is the only thing, and then it's like Eric Gray and guys like that, from keeping Tyrone Tracy from having an opportunity. I think if Devin Singletary went down, there's a chance that Tyrone Tracy would have viability this year. He's sort of got a little bit of Antonio Gibson to him. I think he's super interesting. I'll say Malachi Corley, the fact that you can get him in the 3rd round is not a sleeper at all. But Malachi Corley, I could have made an argument for it, like the 209. Corley now, anytime you get in the 3rd round, like, he's got a path to being – I'll give Anthony Amico from Established to Run a credit for this one. He made a Randall Cobb comparison in terms of like how Aaron Rodgers could use him. I didn't necessarily see that. I said more of like a bigger, stronger Curtis Samuel. But anyway, you cut it. Like, I think he'll have a role for the Jets this year. When you start seeing Adonai Mitchell falling to the middle of the 2nd round, you have to take a look at that one. And then Will Shipley, who again, yeah, lands behind Saquon Barkley. But if Saquon Barkley were to miss time, Shipley's much better than Kenneth Gainwell, much cleaner prospect. Mm-hmm. And I think if Saquon misses time, like some, when you get to this range of the draft, you're not going to get your longtime RBs in your dynasty roster. You're going to get these kind of mercenaries who can give you some value to either use in your lineup or trade. So like a guy like Will Shipley, Saquon, if he goes down, misses 6 weeks, you're going to be able to flip a third rounder for a 2025 second all day long, or use him and get top 20 RB weeks out of him. So those are the kind of guys I'm looking at. A lot of these handcuff running backs, they're fun prospects. I'll say, you know, in terms of like trying to shoot for some of these later guys also in the third round, Jermaine Burton is really interesting, yeah, for me in the third.
Definitely.
Burton, you know, would have been a second round pick had he done a few things differently. I think in terms of, you know, not necessarily off the field. People talk about these off the field guys, and Burton's sort of been labeled this troublemaker off the field, but it's not like legal problems. It's more of like a bouncing around schools, that sort of thing. Cincinnati sort of had a track record with some guys like that. Burton, if you watch like his film, he's a second round pick that Cincinnati got in the third. And I think he'll, yeah, be on the field on three wide receiver sets this year, but his path is 2025. He is potentially the heir apparent to T. Higgins. If T. Higgins moves, mm-hmm, on, then you're really cooking with gas. So Burton, you could push into the second round easily. But for just shows the quality of this class that for me, he doesn't get inside my top 24.
Yeah, you're right. This class is insane. Like, it's, yep, just so many times after the draft, you're like, oh, damn it. Like, but still, we're so strong, like going deep into like the third, or even some guys in the fourth round, people are getting excited about as, oh, yeah, well, which I know happens every year. But
yeah,
I mean, yeah, I love this draft class. And Theo, thank you so much for coming on to the Dynasty Hot Seat. Great to have you on and chatting through these rookies. Theo, before you go, can you please remind everybody where can they find all your amazing work online?
Yeah, so you can find all my written work at playerprofiler.com. You can find all my podcasts at anywhere you get your podcasts, right under Player Profiler. You can search my pods directly, or if you just put in Player Profiler, you get sort of all of our main podcasts all together. And then you can find me on YouTube, Player Profiler YouTube. All my pods are there. And then also I'm releasing some like YouTube-only content, some like shorter videos to kind of help you out. I'll be dropping like a Dynasty Winners and Losers video probably before the weekend. So yeah, this is always a pleasure getting a chance to chop it up with you guys. And yeah, this is a really fun time to talk content because we do have these rookie drafts right around the corner, if not going on right now.
Exactly. So Theo, thank you so much once again. And hey, thank you everybody as well for listening. Just a reminder, if you've not already, hitting that like and that subscribe button if you're on YouTube, and if you're anywhere else, I'm sure there's a thumbs up or a five star, or I don't know, Theo, something like that, right? That'll be out there. Hit whatever you can as long as it's nice. So Theo, one more time, thank you so much. Everybody again, thank you so much. And remember, for anything Dynasty you need to know, keep it locked on the Certified Inferno. We'll see you next time.